Do all of the unknowns just stick people in things? Tree holes, the dirt.
Other people.
Oh, no.
Jared, inside of you, there are two wolves. It's remarkable you've survived this long.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer Jed.
Before we get started this week, boys, I think we have some fan mail.
We do. We received some really cool, like, stained glass-esque Kuga art prints from Sphinx.
Thank you so much. These are absolutely gorgeous. We very much appreciate them. They will be framed. They will be hung up in the studio.
Absolutely. That's so cool.
What you been up to this weekend, boys?
Rearranging our house.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, sister lived with us for a last year. She is gone, which means we now have a dedicated playroom for Bug.
Oh, that's gotta be nice.
It is very nice, but it has been an exhausting 2 weeks redoing three bedrooms and the living room.
I can imagine. It's quite the undertaking.
How about you?
I'm interspersed between terraforming my backyard to solve some of our drainage issues with a big rain garden.
Your French drain didn't do it?
So it has solved all of the problems on that part of the yard. The other problem is we are on the downhill slope from our neighbor's house, so water tends to just abut against the house. So it wasn't a serious problem, but now it's more pronounced because the rest of the yard doesn't flood with it because of the French drain. So we just have a short pond in the backyard next to the house. So we figured might as well, if it's going to flood there anyway, add some elephant ear plants.
I would say dig, put in a liner, and actually have a pond.
We could. They would attract mosquitoes.
That is true. Carnivorous plants.
Strangely enough, those are the only plants I can't keep alive. I can't tell you how many pitcher plants I've purchased, and not one of them has survived.
That's tragic, because that's what I was thinking of suggesting.
Yeah, no, Venus flytraps, they apparently have to be neglected to a certain degree to maintain their little traps. If they're getting enough nutrients from the soil or the environment around them, those atrophy because they're unnecessary. So, at least for Venus flytraps, my plants are taken care of too well that they don't need to be predatory. Yeah, I've got the fat couch potato cat of Venus flytraps.
Amazing. So, this week, we are watching episode 3, My Transformation. And do you want to take a shot as to what we might see?
Pink, blue, and white flag?
I don't see why not.
Yay!
From now on, I will not be citing the episode writer for Agito, except for the one episode not written by Inoue Toshiki. Episode 3 was directed by Naga Ishitakayo and originally aired February 11, 2001.
You mean you don't want to hear 50 different iterations of the text-to-speech trying to get that name right? Because I was here for it.
It was the 500th episode of the Kamen Rider franchise as a whole.
Oh wow, that's cool.
That is cool. All right, well, let's get to it.
A jump to the sky turns to a rider review.
You know, I think I get why that one guy wasn't turtly enough for the Turtly Club in Master Disguise now.
Yeah.
You gotta be pretty damn turtly.
You do, and also metallic, apparently.
I think shiny the fact and he was chrome, Jared.
Yes. All right, so this episode starts off right where last week left off. Agito attacks G3. G3 is like, who are you? What are you? The fins fold out.
Ruh-roh, Raggy.
Are we going to see Hikawa die?
Would have been great. No.
This is the moment where Shoichi kind of wakes up from his trance. I guess you were right. He was effectively sleepwalking through that fight.
Yep.
And the fins fold back in and he just sort of stares at his hands and runs away. At that exact moment, G3's power supply also gives out.
Convenient.
Yes. During the fight between Agito and G3, Azawa and Amuro are in the trailer trying to just beg him to run away so that he doesn't die.
Trailer D and trailer dumbass.
Why you gotta be so rude? You know, the support has to be somewhere, and they're not going to be on the field.
Listen, they've got a lot of progress to make if they're going to keep up with Sugita and Sakurai.
It's true, but, you know, Sugita and Sakurai also didn't come into their own really until the 30s, as far as episodes go. They have time. I'm sure they'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, they have some pretty big government-issued shoes to fill.
We don't stick with them. We follow Shuichi as he gets back to the bike, looks at his hands again, demorphs.
I think my headcanon is this giant drug trip for him.
Also, I feel like I need to come up with a better term for that. Because when we talk about him turning into his armor form, we always use he henshins. But then we use demorph.
Unhenshin.
Reverse henshin?
Now I need to know what the term for this is.
Dehenshin.
I realize that you are probably technically correct, the best kind of correct. It just doesn't have the same mouthfeel.
We'll figure out what that word is.
Either way, he collapses to the ground, and as luck would have it, Mana happened to be biking through that area at the time, and she finds him and asks if he's okay, and he slowly scrambles back up and, clutching her around her waist real tight, says, "I need your help." We get the opening credits. And from there, we cut to the Misugi residence, where Taichi is being a little shit.
Yep.
He wants to know where breakfast is, and why hasn't Shuichi made breakfast yet, and why is he sleeping in? He never sleeps in. Where is breakfast?
This is not the behavior we expect from new mommy.
And Mana tries to be like, hey, you know, he had a rough night last night. Let's give him some space. Taichi's just like, but none of us know how to make breakfast.
This family is non-functional. Like, immediately off the rip, they demonstrate their complete and total incompetence at every household task.
And we get a brief shot under the blanket of Shuichi just there, very deep in his feels.
Mm-hmm. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Pretty sure that's just what he's hearing in his head the whole time.
Yes. But from there, we cut to police HQ. And Hikawa and Hojo are talking to the brass.
Ah, the brass.
And they're like, so you're positive that these were unknowns that you fought? And Hikawa's like, yes, again. And Hojo's like, why, yes, in fact, they were. And you know what? Your department really needs to be fully mobilized. The G3 armor? Oh, it's great. It really helped out. We need to produce more. I would really like to help you out. Could I get a suit of that armor? My intentions are purely good.
Oh, hi. Thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
To be fair, I also want power.
I mean, who doesn't?
If I saw an opportunity where people are like, we need to mass produce this. Can you throw one more on the stack? Just, you know, for no reason.
As they leave, Hikawa thanks Hojo for the help, and Hojo gives a very sort of like, oh, really? The pleasure is mine. I don't like him at all. I hate this character.
I'm also not a huge fan. Having trouble connecting with that character, for sure.
Feels intentional. Sure, we'll get to that eventually. From there, we cut to the hospital, and the coach has shown up to check on Ryo, only Ryo's not there. At some point in the middle of the night, he left. And no one saw him leave.
Wasn't he in a light coma before?
He was. Mm. Seriously, not a single faculty member saw him at any point. This is a hospital.
He leaped out the window like Batman.
I don't think you can open hospital windows for that very reason.
Well, if you can if you're Batman.
I don't have an argument against that.
Batman.
We cut to the stairs leading out from maybe a subway station or just some sort of underground tunnel, and Ryo is stumbling his way up. It really looked several times like he was just going to slip and fall backwards and be right back at the hospital.
Yeah, he's going through it.
This shot of Ryo walking up the stairs is really interesting. The rotating camera and long distance help sell that he is unwell. You might also recognize this location from Kuga, as the place where Badzu killed a cop. It's a very common location in both Rider and Sentai.
Is it? Okay. See, when maybe it's because of the angle we saw it from, but I would have thought it was either where Galma killed someone, or your favorite Goma going down the stairs with the interesting choice of light when we got into the argument over green versus red.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the same tunnel system, but not that specific area.
Okay. But from there, we cut to the G3 trailer. Hikawa comes back in. Ozawa and Amuro are already there. And Hikawa proceeds to tell them about how the conversation with the brass went. And he even mentions that Hojo suggested mass producing the G3 armor. And Ozawa's like, hey, don't trust anything Hojo says.
She's got a point.
Okay, but this character I like. She is pragmatic to a fault, and I appreciate it. She takes no nonsense from everybody. I'm enjoying her character so far.
Ozawa is my favorite character in this season.
Okay. She goes on to explain that apparently Hojo was originally the top of the list for the G3 program, and they decided to not go with him anyways.
You know, that speaks volumes about his character. Like, yeah, you're the perfect candidate. Too bad you're a huge dick and nobody wants to work with you.
Yeah. Hikawa also discusses not just the unknowns, but that the other writer referred to himself as Agito. And Ozawa's like, none of that matters.
Details, details.
Who cares that it has a name? If it has a name, you can control it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say if it has a name, you can kill it.
I started to go with that, but then I thought about more like true name magic and controlling versus killing.
And we do have some magical space discs other people's heads.
Yeah.
Hardcore calling a Hojo heel turn, by the way. At some point.
Face turn? Because he's already kind of a heel.
Like, I predict he will be a bad guy. He will be in a fight scene in one of the G3 suits. That's my prediction.
Ozawa eventually just tells him, hey, unknowns, Agito, doesn't matter. They're all your enemies. Treat them as such. Sure, no nonsense. Black and white, no nuance here.
Yep.
Let's go with it. That sounds like the police way to do things.
You see a turtle, you get out the turtle mallet.
Tale as old as time.
Goodness.
It's true. Turtle mallets, tale as old as time. But from there, we go to the OO parts lab.
Ooh, parts.
And we find out that they're about 90% of the way done decoding the puzzle box.
Hey, stop it!
That went by so fast.
I know.
They had like the second or third one done when we ended the last episode. Now they're done with the box?
Just about. At no point are any of them discussing, hey, should we be doing this? Nope, we're going to decode the stupid thing.
Yeah, it will never come up.
We then cut to a random dig site, and person there is brushing away some dirt, brushes away a little more and finds some fingers and gets real curious and continues brushing, even though it's pretty obvious what this is. But he waits until he has uncovered the entire hand and wrist to then start screaming.
You know, Jared, it's really about having an adequate sample size in science, right? Like, we see four human fingers sticking out of the ground. Maybe it's not. We need more evidence. We're going to keep digging until we find that buried continent, and then we're just going to scream our pretty little heads off.
And as he's screaming, a silvery head pops up out of the dirt.
The slightly misnamed tortoise lord, Testudo oceanus, is based off a sea turtle. Testudo is a genus of Mediterranean tortoises, while oceanus likely derives from ocean. As the second monster of the second Heisei series, he is likely a reference to Kame Bazooka, the second Kaijin from V3, the second Showa series.
Are you familiar with the origins of Testudo as a word?
No, I am not.
It actually goes back to the Roman Empire. Yeah, it'll come up. It'll keep coming up.
Tale as old as time.
Since they are using kind of like a faux approach to Latin, a testudo was the turtle shell formation that the Roman legionaries used when they put their shields over their heads and formed that shield wall to prevent archers. And that's actually where the turtle got its name for it as well, because they form out of all of their shields one big armored shell. Now you know something.
His face sculpt makes him look like he's always slightly surprised and confused at what's going on.
The turtle?
Yes. Yeah,
also, it makes him look a little bit like a luchador.
A bit,
like,
yeah.
He's got Rey Mysterio vibes going on.
Also, these names are going to be the death of me for this dex. So yes, Testudo Oceanus pops up like Mr. Rossetti, looks around, sinks back in. We cut to the Misuki residence, and Shoichi is trying to work in the garden, but he's depressed. The plants are depressed.
She's got too much sad boy.
And Mana comes out to check on him. So, you don't seem okay. Is it in relation to your past? And he's like, no, it's not about my past. It's about my present, and I don't know what to do.
I appear to be some manner of superhero, I guess. Hopefully, that's the best outcome for this.
I think I killed a giant kitty cat and then went to kill a person who looked awfully similar to me.
None of this is actually said to her.
No, but he does say that it's about his present and now he knows some more. And with the new information he has, he doesn't really know how to keep moving forward. And that's fair. You wake up from a coma to realize that you're some sort of karate fighting bug man, hopefully hero. But that you also were about to kill a person after having killed a couple monsters? Yeah, I think you rethink everything at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mana does her best to comfort, but he seems inconsolable at the moment. She and Taichi go to talk to the professor about, hey, what should we do with Shuichi? And the professor diagnoses him with depression. That they've been putting too much of the load of domestic responsibility on him, and this is causing him to spiral. And therefore, they need to do the tasks themselves to try and make him feel better, or at least put less pressure on him.
Like, honestly, that's fair, though. He's one person, that's a household of four people with him involved, and he's doing the gardening, the dishes, the laundry, all of the cleaning. I get that he needs to earn his keep, but like, damn, guys, come on, get off the couch.
Yeah, so they are divvied up. Taichi is going to do the cleaning. Mana is going to do the laundry. And the professor is going to cook.
Let the stoogery begin.
But before we get to that.
All right, I think it's stoogery. I think we narrowed that one down.
I appreciate that stoogery is a trademark of Inoue. Anyways, we cut to an apartment and Hikawa lets himself in. And he's looking around. This is the apartment of the victim of Oceanus. We cut back to the Misugi residence. And the professor is very slowly cutting through a cabbage. Mana is ironing clothes. Taichi, effectively standing right beside her, is vacuuming. And I don't think he necessarily meant that they need to do these tasks right now, but stoogery. So they're doing all of the tasks right now.
You know, there's that motivating force, right? Like, if you're sitting on the couch and somebody else starts cleaning, there's an impetus for you to also get up and start cleaning. It's an undeniable pull. You feel so lazy if you stay sitting while somebody else is doing housework.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, Taichi swings the vacuum around and catches Mana's hair.
Womp.
And she screams, which causes the professor to turn to see what's going on. And he knocks the pot off of the stove and boiling hot water falls on the ground and onto his pants, legs, and foot. He falls to the ground as well, screaming in pain. Taichi and Mana, somehow having gotten the vacuum off of her hair, come in to check.
While neglecting the iron that is currently sitting on the shirt.
The iron is just left there. He asks for the medical kit. Taichi goes to get it, drops the box everywhere. A shirt catches on fire from the iron still sitting on it. So they go to fill up another pot with water to pour onto the iron. And before they can do that, Shoichi jumps in and just smothers the fire with a blanket, which is what you do. The iron's electrical. Water would have just made things worse. These people are idiots.
Yeah, that was a world championship cock-up cascade we just watched. That was spectacular. Truly a Rube Goldberg of destroying your own home.
Indeed. Shoichi, having put the fire out, looks at them and goes, it's fine, leave it to me.
Hey, stop it!
You're putting an edge on his voice, but it was definitely the emotion that was there.
You're right. He didn't say it in any particular way, but the implication was,
you
don't
fucking
you
lemmings.
And that brings us to this week's Tropusatsu, House Husband.
Bum bum bum.
Now it's like a housewife, but a man. Tropusatsu over.
Would you like to dig a little further?
Yes, we'll dig further anyways.
Is like woman, but is man. That caught up? Okay, move on.
So it's a male character who takes care of things like cooking, cleaning, childcare, the domestic labor. often these characters are shown as less manly for filling feminine role, but not in this. Shoichi is definitely depicted as being a badass for able to do this, and makes them all look like incompetent rubes.
Yep.
Usually, this trope will be contrasted against working woman, or more traditionally manly man, just so you can see the difference. Domestic labor doesn't get enough credit.
No, it's considered scut work, but good lord, how fast, A, you can fall behind, and the deleterious effects of letting that kind of thing compound.
Yes. Shoichi isn't married. He's not even a part of this family. He's just a person who's taken in with them. But he is filling the role. He is doing all of the domestic labor. He is the house husband for this family. But again, they do a good job of portraying him not as feminine, but just peculiar, odd. There's something a little different about him, but the house doesn't function without him.
I don't know. I didn't even read it as odd. This portrayal of this male character being competent and effective at these house chores and demonstrating him in that role in a positive light. We had to do Mrs. Doubtfire to get a man doing housework in American cinema. That's all I'm saying.
I don't have a counter against Mrs. Doubtfire, but it certainly seems like Taichi and Mana don't seem to know what to do because there's not a mom there to have shown them.
Valid. Valid counterpoint.
And there was the jab that the professor has made more than once against Shoichi's cooking.
Okay, but number one, it is a running archetype that writers are bad at cooking.
But he's not depicted as bad at cooking. It's more the fact that he's cooking at all.
Hmm. Maybe.
To be fair, I think that's because he cooks the same thing for weeks at a time.
Well, that might be because he also has to do the ironing and the vacuuming and the anyway.
Yeah. So it is a common thing when this trope is played straight that, be it house husband or housewife, when they stop doing the work, or others are like, we should do the work for them and give them a chance to relax, everything falls apart.
I think I've seen about 40 90s commercials to that exact effect.
Yep. We then cut back to the apartment. Ikawa's walking through, examining things, opening boxes.
Looking for souvenirs, keepsakes.
Yeah. And he finds one. It's not what I would have picked as a souvenir, but it seemed to catch his eye, and it's just an innocuous bottle with a 100 yen coin inside it.
Specifically a glass bottle.
Yes. And we cut back to the Misugi residence now. Shoichi is in full domestic labor mode, and he makes it look easy. He puts them all to shame. In fact, the rest of the household is just following him around, staring in disbelief like, we almost burnt the house down and he's doing this?
Yeah, yeah.
We cut to Johaku University. The coach comes into the pool. Another student informs him that Ryo was there. And he's like, what? Where is he? The guy's like, I don't know, but he wanted me to give you this. And hands him a piece of paper that says resignation on it. It
literally just says resignation in cursive. There's no name. There's nothing. It's just resignation in cursive.
This actually appears to be how resignation letters are done in Japan and other Asian countries. Every time I've seen it in Asian media, it looks like this.
Really? Okay. And I learned something.
Good. So the coach runs outside, trying to look around like, he escaped from the hospital last night. He can't have gotten far. But he doesn't see him. He should have looked behind that tree slightly to his right, though.
You know, like literally the only large tree in visual distance.
We see that Ryo is hiding behind the tree. He's still breathing heavy. He's not doing well. But I guess he was well enough to write and formalize his resignation from the swim team.
That's what he spent all of his recovered energy on.
Priorities.
It was perfect.
We do a quick cut to OO Parts. They're at 95% unlocking the puzzle box.
That last one. Last lock.
They're going for the final lock now. And we get that high-frequency noise again, and we cut back to Ryo, and he is, once again, doubled up in pain, grasping at his stomach.
As a dog comes up and starts barking in his face.
I'm a good boy.
The dog's just like, human? Human, are you okay, human? You seem in distress, can I help, human?
It always makes it better when somebody yells, you are in distress, right in your face while you're in distress.
We cut back to the Misugi residence. Shoichi is once again gardening, but he seems to be in a much better mood now. And Mana comes out and even comments on the fact that he's in a much better mood. And he's like, yeah, things just sort of fell into place while I was doing the housework and showing all of you up. That last bit is only a slight exaggeration on my part.
Heavily implied.
Yes. And he proceeds to say about he wasn't sure what he was going to do, but it's nice to feel needed. And he thinks that what he wants is here, something where he can protect people. And Mana's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You're dumb.
It's okay, sweetie. This wasn't for you anyway.
And she walks away. In the G3 trailer, Ikawa comes back in and shows them the bottle he found. And at first, Amuro's like, it's just a bottle. What of it? And Ikawa's like, hey, look again. And Ozawa looks and is like, wait. She pulls out a 100 yen coin. And sure enough, it doesn't fit in the bottle. Is that the X-Men theme? So they proceed to discuss, well, how could this 100 yen coin have gotten into this glass bottle without breaking? And then Hikawa's like, meanwhile, also, you remember this photo from last episode? The kid's there at a lake that hasn't existed for a decade, but this was taken weeks ago.
Okay, one of these is the premise for an X-Files episode. The other is a $10 magic trick from, like, your local magic shop. I stand corrected. Goddamn Professor X put that coin in that bottle.
Or it's the thought experiment that Batman and Robin had to do during 52.
All I'm saying is one piece of flash paper would blow these people's minds.
And so Hikawa starts discussing these seemingly innocuous but also improbable, almost magical happenstance. He's like, sure, there's a chance that this photo is just a fake, but if it's not Photoshop and is in fact real.
Yeah, we have to remember that, like, we live in a post-Photoshop world, so the authenticity of photographs being in question is a stable part of our digital environment. Back then, like, in the early aughts, Photoshop was a fairly new thing as far as, like, tools that the public had access to, so it was more likely to assume something weird was going on in the picture than the picture had been modified, I suppose.
And Ozawa's like, so I'm going to call an expert in otherworldly phenomena. He was a professor I had when I went to college.
God, I hope they have a seance.
I'm so glad to know that Ozawa found her career after presumably at least taking one class on paranormal behavior.
That is the standing implication, isn't it? That she at least briefly, like maybe mid-sophomore year, dabbled in paranormal research as a degree opportunity.
Turns out that, you know, the occult club at the university needed membership.
Very, very robust recruiting drive.
And who should she call? But of course, Professor Misugi. At a park, Oceanus is seen watching a guy doing some mildly impressive razor scooter tricks.
He gets super jealous and decides he wants that scooter.
Who didn't want a razor scooter in 2001?
I don't know, but Oceanus is about to go take it.
Oceanus attacks the poor kid and seems to just sort of like backhand his head 180 degrees.
Yeah, dude, these turtles love bitch slapping people.
And in that moment, we cut to Shoichi. And I guess he had a psychic vision or something because he's suddenly like, I have to leave. And goes and gets on his bike and drives off. And Mana comes to the window. Remember, she is presumably actually psychic.
Yes, yes.
And she sees him leaving, calls out for him, but he's already gone.
On his motorcycle. Yes. So she decides to follow on her bicycle.
Yes.
You're getting entirely too much mileage out of that sound
effect. I think
he's
getting exactly how much mileage he needs. In the G3 trailer, Hikawa gets the notification that an unknown has been spotted. We cut back to O parts. And the final dial sinks into the progenitor Tetris brick.
Bum, bum, bum.
And it starts to light up, and the top squares around the cross start to lift up.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut to the park, and Shoichi arrives and sees Oceanus and goes to engage with him. And somehow, despite the fact that he was on a motorcycle and she was on a pedal, maybe 10-speed bicycle. Mana catches up.
It was coming. We knew it was coming.
So not only is she psychic, but she somehow has super speed when on a bicycle.
Yeah, she pedaled real good.
Real good, because she don't seem to be out of breath at all.
No.
But as Oceanus goes to engage, Shoichi, seeming to be fully conscious and aware of what he's doing this time, Henshin's.
Mm-hmm.
Slay! Slay!
Yeah, I like that he's got the hip slap.
Yeah. Once again, the blinding light comes out. And you know what? An added benefit of this blinding, glaring light is that it helps mask the CG overlay for the Henshin.
Yeah.
This looks a lot better than just about any CG Henshin Godai had last season.
Yeah. It covers the gaps really well. I appreciate the effect, even if it does just look like he's got a 300-watt floodlight taped to his pelvis.
Who says he doesn't? So now, Agito, Oceanus fight, when suddenly a new challenger appears.
This is also turtle, but this one's bronze.
The second tortoise lord is Testudo Terrestris. Terrestris most likely comes from terrestrial.
So now it's a 2-on-1.
Oh my.
Nope, not a better way to say that.
Now it's a 3-way.
Worst way to say that. Agito, Finn's fan out, goes to do the kick to Oceanus?
Yep.
Yes. Oceanus turns around and tanks the hit on its shell.
And straight up no effect either. Like, hits the shell with a full-on rider kick and just nothing.
Yeah.
Did you see the wings on their shells?
Yes, the little...
No, I didn't notice that.
Up near the shoulders, I think.
They're little tortoise epaulets?
Oh. No, I didn't see those. I saw the wing-like fixtures up here, not on the back of their shells.
So they're Koopas.
Yes.
Oh no.
Are we gonna see a dry bones variant?
I hope so.
That'd be cool and terrifying.
Skelly bands.
Hikawa shows up, and then we cut to the OO Parts lab where Mikumo and everyone else there is staring at awe at the blinding angelic light coming from the now fully opened puzzle box. As two spiral statue things rise up.
Yep, turns out that entire original Tetris brick was all just an incredibly complicated machine that makes rock candy.
Yes.
Because that's what it looks like comes out of the top of this thing.
Looks like rock candy, kind of, maybe DNA, also maybe giant bracers.
You know. Yeah, I kind of thought like gauntlets
at first.
But yeah, it's like rock candy DNA helixes.
It looks painful.
It does.
And that's the end of this episode.
And we've left on quite a cliffhanger.
That is a very interesting note to end on.
I'm honestly a little surprised. The pacing of this series is messing with my head a little bit. I kind of assumed that this ancient artifact thing would be something that we'd be dealing with the whole series.
Yeah, so did I.
And like, yeah, final lock at the end when we know everything. What, jumping the gun? Like, nipple machinery too early? Like, what are we dinging?
Maybe at some point we'll know. But yeah, this seemed like it should have been a season-long mystery of what finally happens when we unlock the Tetris brick, and now they've done it in episode 3.
That's because there will be other Tetris bricks, Jared.
Even more progenitor?
I am the man who arranges the blocks.
I now think more along the lines of, you know, Rhydon, Mew, Arceus... Which is the first?
Oh.
Bulbasaur. That's the fourth one that goes in there.
It's Bulbasaur.
Is it? I mean, that's number one in the national decks.
That is the first Pokemon.
But Mew is the one from which all other Pokemon come from.
But
Arceus designed the universe. But Rhydon's also the very first Pokemon that was ever designed.
This is the wrong podcast to get this pedantic about.
It's the same feel, though.
No fear. No pain.
And so we're back to Kamen Rider.
So I guess, as is traditional, what do we want to pick for our rating? Just did anything?
I got nothing.
Tiny wings.
Dirt mounds, maybe.
Cabbage?
Depression?
Vacuum cleaners?
Ah. Burn holes.
Sure. Why not?
We're just burned shirts.
Burned shirts. we don't have a monster that's died, so I
it
guess
is
we...
the Monster Mash. The Monster
Mash. We're doing it anyways?
Wait, you're debating whether to fuck the monster pre-death? That's new for you. And I will add no context.
I'm not fucking corpses. I have standards.
So would you fuck this turtle?
I can't with those flippers.
I don't know, man. Those spankings.
Don't look at me like that. Unlike this segment, my default is pass.
Just looking for somebody to commiserate with me, but fine. Leave me alone. Let's go.
You can have the turtle flipper whatever, you know, if it trips your trigger, I guess you do you. Just no.
Yeah, whatever sinks your ship, I guess.
Shall I go first for the episode?
Sure.
Actually, I think for this season, we will default to Jed going first.
Sure.
This episode features some good camera work. There is also a certain goofy charm with the Tortoise Lords popping out of the ground. Solid episode, but not groundbreaking. Pun not originally intended. 3.5.
There's some interesting character work. Shoichi's realization that he is Agito and what that might have as an effect on him moving forward is certainly interesting. We get some great physical comedy in the stoogery of the household, and just as equally comedic when Shoichi shows them all up. I do agree, I liked the Tortoise Lords popping up like Whack-A-Moles or Mr. Rossetti. I wish that maybe they did look a bit more gopher tortoise-like, but there's a lot of fun stuff here, but it's not spectacular. I think I'm going to go with a 3. It's pretty average for me.
Yeah, I think mine's going to pretty much fall the same with a 3. We get some cool like little tidbits for the future. Pacing is a little weird in this episode, which I don't know, maybe that's just a me thing. But yeah, our monster designs just being, the pacing being weird, fair enough.
Okay.
But yeah, the monsters being just carbon copies of each other. Like, we've seen two sets of samey monsters. Like, the panthers at least had different coat patterns to indicate, like, different types of big cats. The turtles being identical but chromatic shifts, when we have one labeled land, one labeled sea, felt undercommittal. So, yeah, 3, bog standard.
So with a 3, and a 3.5, that brings us to a 3.1666 burned shirts for the episode. This was fine, serviceable. I feel maybe slightly less than the last 2 weeks.
Agreed.
Also, the last 2 weeks, I realized set an interesting standard, because by the end of episode 2 at Kuga, we had had one monster death. We've had 3 already.
And double the number of riders that we had in the entirety of Kuga immediately.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see where the series goes. I think my expectations are just a little weird because we went from the high energy of the finality of Kuga, and now we've reset, and we've reset the stakes, and we're growing back up to those stakes. I'm ready to get to the stakes.
Well, maybe they'll happen next week.
Which holes are we going to shove people in next week?
The only way to find out is next week we'll watch episode 4. Puzzle Decoding.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. You can get access to our exclusive Discord server, running commentary on every episode, and bi-monthly-ish bonus episodes.
Hello, Charlie the Writer Dog.